Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Gregory Goodman, attorney registration number 35992, here on behalf of the appellant Mordecai Orion. Being mindful of Your Honor's instruction just now to kind of jump right into the law and not spend too much time on the facts, I'm going to recite some of the facts because of the procedural history of this case. The only legal issues are really whether or not the judge abused his discretion in applying this default. That's heavily fact dependent. I think the law is somewhat clear in what the law says in this area. So I would like to spend a little time highlighting a couple of the relevant facts that I think the law goes to in this case. And in particular, I think that the most relevant case here is the Pink Staff case at 211 P3rd 698, which is a 2009 decision from the Colorado Supreme Court, and it's a decision that I'm sure Your Honors are familiar with, and it deals at length with the issue of when and if applying the penalty of default is an appropriate sanction for alleged discovery failures or discovery violations. The order of the trial court almost exclusively relied on a much older case, the Quickway case, which quite frankly has been substantially modified by some of these later opinions, including the Pink Staff opinion. What basically happened in this case is that Mr. Orion was incarcerated in September of 2010 in a federal penitentiary in Hawaii for his alleged involvement in some type of scheme that allegedly involves procuring illegal visas for contract workers and whatnot. This was after this case had already been rolling. He was incarcerated in a federal prison in Hawaii. He was confined to Hawaii. I, as his counsel, made my job very difficult trying to respond to discovery, prepare for pretrial and whatnot. Nonetheless, I was able to
find. Does the record show how long he was detained in Hawaii?
He was detained until approximately February 2011, and that is in the record, Your Honors. In November of 2010, discovery responses were filed to some discovery that was propounded, I believe, at the very end of August. And the delay in filing the responses was because initially Mr. Orion, I didn't even know where he was. I couldn't reach him. He finally was given some telephone privileges where I was able to speak to him on the phone enough to work on these discovery responses. They were filed on November 12, 2010. This case was originally set for trial for December 2010, and it was postponed based upon Mr. Orion being incarcerated. Nonetheless, these discovery responses were filed on November 12th. For more than 4 months after that, there wasn't a peep from the other side. No communication of any kind, no motions filed, nothing. Then on March 17th, 2011, 2 months before trial, they file a motion objecting to the discovery responses on the grounds that they're deficient and vague. The court entered an order after that saying, I find the discovery responses to be deficient, but did not in any way say what was wrong with the discovery responses. During this time period, I, as counsel for Mr. Orion, communicated with the counsel for plaintiff numerous times saying, would you please provide some basis for what your problem with the discovery responses is.
How about that there wasn't any information given? Very little information given in the responses.
As far as that, when I asked for specific examples, none were given, is the bottom line. When I said, would you please give me an example of a question that you find deficient, give point to the question, tell me what's deficient about it, no responses were given of any kind.
Well, that's about as clear as the responses you gave. I mean, you kept saying that this question, even to the court-approved interrogatories, the question is confusing, it's compound, no answer. I mean, I've read some of the responses, and I mean, they're sort of typical of the game playing that used to go on when I practiced law in responding to these things, and that is, how can you write something down without answering the question?
Your Honor, there's I would respond in two ways to that. One is that I was trying to do the best job I could with a guy who's incarcerated and doesn't have access to documents, and I'm trying to get information from him just via the telephone. More importantly than that is that...
I mean, you can say that, You can say in response to the interrogatories, he's in prison, I can't communicate with him, I need time. You don't submit answers that don't answer the question.
Fair enough, Your Honor. What I would submit, though, is that this is the posture of this case is that a division of the Denver District Court had already previously ruled that Mr. Orion was not party to the contracted issue. He had been thrown out of an earlier proceeding brought by the plaintiff, which they pursued to finality and got a judgment against his company. But
here they're seeking to pierce the corporate veil, are they not?
Supposedly, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, well, that doesn't make any difference whether he's a party to the contract if they pierce the corporate veil.
But in their discovery responses, it does matter if they ask about questions that are purely in the purview of the company that have already been this company already had a judgment against it. So to the extent that some of their questions were directed specifically to the company and nothing else, the company wasn't party to this lawsuit. And Mr. Orion,
how are they going to prove the basis for piercing the corporate veil without knowing where the funds in the company went?
Your Honor, they already had all that information because they had already obtained a judgment against the company, and there had been extensive discovery in that case.
Does the record reflect that? Does the record reflect that they've already got that information?
Yes, it does, Your Honor.
Where does it reflect it?
Your Honor, it was reflected in both some of my motions, and it was reflected orally at the hearing in this matter on May 16th, 2011.
So they admitted at the hearing that we've got all the information. Where's this?
Senior, at that hearing, if you review the transcript, you will see that he acknowledged that they had a pile of documents and he could not identify any documents that he didn't believe they had.
So, what answers to the rest of the questions?
Well, the problem is that whether I did not know which questions both either the court or the plaintiff had issues with. I didn't know which questions, what discovery, what matters they had issues with because nobody told me. The trial court itself acknowledged on the record that May 16th was the first time he hadn't even looked at the discovery responses prior to that, a few minutes before entering default judgment. So the trial court on May 16th said, okay, I'm going to tell you here are some of the things that I would love, that I expect to see in response to some of these requests, and then immediately entered a default ruling.
Didn't the trial court earlier, you know, when it the first time it considered this and they asked for a default judgment, the trial court said, no, I'm not going to give a default judgment. Didn't it then order basically full and complete disclosure on your part and remind you of the protocol, the discovery protocol, where it's like, okay, we've got to give full and accurate disclosure? Didn't the trial court do that once before?
In 1 month prior, yes, in April.
Right.
So the responses were updated based upon all the information I could get from my client, and they were resubmitted. And, you know, what more could I do?
What answers materially changed in the second response?
There was extensive additional information given about the identities of other parties to the company, who other principals of the company were, the location of company records that Mr. Orion didn't have in his control, things of that nature. There was an extensive amount of updating done based upon the information that was available at that time. So, you know, I understand I can see where you're going, and I can understand Your Honors are saying, yeah, we agree that these discovery responses were, you're saying we believe these discovery responses were insufficient. If that's what you're saying, then so be it. But is the answer then that the trial court says that's it? I told you a month ago that I want you to update these discovery responses. You did. You didn't do it to my satisfaction. I'm entering a default judgment against your client.
What less drastic sanction could the court have imposed on me? Sixth or whenever this was.
The court could have done what it had done already, which was to say, here's what I find the problem is with some of the discovery responses.
Strikes and you're out? I mean, how many chances do they have this court have to give you? I agree with you that had this been a case where what he was precluding you from putting on would have been relevant to your defense, that might be one thing, but how could the plaintiff prove their alter ego case without having some of this information? That seems to be the judge's problem below, and that's what we're dealing with.
And again, Your Honor, maybe the answer would have been that by the time of this, and the court was made well aware of this, by the time May 16th came around, but about a month prior to that, Mr. Orion had secured approval from the relevant federal judge in Hawaii to travel to Colorado for trial, deposition of anything of that nature. So immediately prior to this, for the first time, he had been given permission that he would be able to finally leave the state and come to Colorado. They could have asked to take his deposition. We could have, given that he was now free and was no longer confined, the court could have ordered that he go produce records. The court could have said, in this request for production of documents, I reject your reasons for not producing them. I'm going to order Mr. Orion to produce all those documents in 30 days. He had the ability at that point to do that. Prior to that, he didn't have the ability to do that because he was in jail.
But you said he was released in February of 2000.
He was not allowed to leave confinement at that point. He had to get permission from the court to be able to leave and travel out of the state, and he didn't get that permission until April of 2011.
It's in the record.
It was stated orally. Yes, it's in the
court. The court had never prior to this imposed any sanction, had it?
No, Your Honor.
Hadn't asked for attorney's fees, fined anybody, excluded evidence or excluded defenses?
No, Your Honor. When the original objection to the discovery was made in March, the court said, I would consider imposing sanctions, but they didn't comply with Rule 37, so I'm not going to impose sanctions. That's what had happened at that point. So no prior sanctions or of any kind were applied. But again, if there's something wrong with the discovery, I guess the question here is,
well, why isn't it sufficient enough to say just answer the questions? When the judge says, okay, answer the questions, isn't that a rejection of your objections?
And the responses were changed. I mean, I'm not a mind reader. I don't know, out of however many dozens of questions or responses, I don't know which one the plaintiff had a problem with and which one the judge did.
Didn't the plaintiff specify in their motion to compel which questions they wanted answered?
They did not, no.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Question 13 asks to disclose information about transfers of assets between Global and Orion, your client.
Mm-hmm.
So whether he got any money from them, that's what they wanted to know. And your original answer was, we can answer that because it asked for information about Global, which is a legal objection, but it's not even on the question. The question was, what did your client get? And then when the judge ordered you to answer that question, you gave exactly the same answer. The information is irrelevant because it asked for information about Global. So the judge seems to have clearly sent the message that I reject your suggestion that you can't provide information about Global when Orion's involved in it, yet you don't seem to respond to the judge's order.
He made that clear at the hearing on May 16th. Prior to that, it was just a general, it was nothing but a general ruling saying, I find your discovery responses insufficient or deficient. That's it, though. I mean, again,
Did you ask the judge for some direction as to why it was insufficient?
At the May 16th hearing, I did.
Well, in the April, did you ask for direction from the court why it was insufficient?
I did not.
So the court could presume that you might be knowledgeable about why it would have been insufficient?
I did not ask that, Your Honor. So
now, the court entered sanctions against your client and you both?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Your Honor.
And what are the nature of the sanctions against you?
Attorney's fee award of $5,000-something pursuant to Rule 37. So I guess the question is, the Pink Staff case gave specific examples of when default is an appropriate sanction for discovery failures. And it gave the specific example of a year with someone doing something like of discovery failures. That was the specific example it gave. And the case makes very, very clear that default is the harshest of all sanctions, and it should only be imposed in extreme circumstances, and that the court is always under an obligation to look for the least harsh sanction, find out what they can do that's going to cause the least amount of prejudice. If you look at the record, you'll see that, I mean, the plaintiff in this case refused to participate in the preparation of a trial management order, they had done no pre-trial work. It's not that they never even submitted an affidavit of damages. They never submitted any evidence of any kind. The only action that was taken was,
why would they have to submit an affidavit of damages? Wasn't it admitted in the answer that $72,000 had been deposited with your client?
That was not admitted. Now, it was with the business Global Horizons.
It was not admitted by Orion that $72,000 had been deposited with Global Horizons.
That's correct, yes, Your Honor.
Okay. So why would they need evidence of the damages if basically liability had been determined by the default judgment and you had a $72,000 deposit?
My time is up, Your Honor. Would you like me to respond?
I would. Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honor, that was a judgment that was entered against Global Horizons, and so just because a judgment was entered against Global Horizons, that means that judgment would automatically be applied to the person if the corporate veil was pierced. I don't believe that's the case. There was also a number of other provisions in the agreement that had to do that were not applicable. There was attorney's fees provisions. The total award was $100,000+, but this Mr. Orion was not the only principal of this company.
But Mr. Orion was the defendant in this case.
That's correct.
Right. Thank you, Counsel.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Nathan Whitney, last name WHITNEY, bar number 39002.
Whitney,
correct. On behalf of the appellee, Mr. Rajan Gurung, and may it please the court. The real issue before the court here is whether or not Judge Miller, the trial court judge, abused his discretion in entering default judgment against Mr. Orion for his willful disregard of his discovery obligations and multiple court orders.
Well, let me ask you this, two questions. I have two questions. I'm very curious about this case, both counsel. But one question is, why did your client wait 4 months before lodging a discovery objection? And the second thing is it willful when essentially nobody seems to have, you know, gone out of the way to indicate what the problem is with the responses?
In your, if I can answer the second question first, it is still willful, irregardless of the time that elapsed in between the answering of the discovery request and when the motion was filed. The obligation is squarely on the shoulders of Mr. Orion in this matter. Really, the only action of my client, Mr. Grum, that's relevant here is his propounding of those discovery requests. He got the ball rolling from that point forward. The ball was in the court of the defendant. The defendant chose many times throughout the course of this case not to properly respond to the discovery request, specifically the interrogatories. That resulted in two motions to compel, two court orders. It resulted in the trial court vacating the May 16th trial date. Instead of rubber stamping Mr. Grom's motion for immediate entry of default judgment, he instead set it for hearing on that matter. At that hearing, he went through those interrogatories, question by question, and asked counsel for Mr. Orion, what's your objection here? And at the conclusion of that hearing, it was apparent, Your Honor, that those answers were not coming. That he was not going to do simply what he had to do to mitigate all this was simply respond to those interrogatories and those discovery requests. At that point, the judge had issued two orders. At the April hearing on pretrial conference, he had discussed this matters with counsel. He'd issued the second order, which specifically found those responses deficient, and said, if they're not remedied, I will entertain sanctions, including dismissal, which what he meant was default judgment against the defendant in this matter. So at the conclusion of that hearing, he had, one, entertained less severe sanctions. He discussed these with counsel. And at the conclusion of that hearing, it was apparent that Mr. Orion had not and was not going to properly respond. And bottom line is his willful refusal deprived my client of all the information necessary to prove his case. It had taken away his ability to present this case to a finder of fact.
He indicates that the record would reflect that your client had all the documents your client needed.
And I would dispute that, Your Honor. If you look at the arbiter's award, which is attached to what I believe is the plaintiff's motion to amend the complaint, In that arbiter's award, there's a specific finding that Global Horizons had not lived up to their discovery obligations in arbitration as well. That is referenced by Mr. Weiner in the May 16th hearing. And regardless, he didn't make the minimal effort to point to what documents that may have been disclosed in the arbitration that would be relevant to the interrogatories and the request for production. So I do dispute that. One other thing we do dispute is the renewed motion to compel certainly did set forth specific objections to the answers that or lack thereof that were provided by Mr. Orion in his responses to the discovery requests.
In specific, identified which interrogatories
in specific,
had not been properly answered.
In specific, Your Honor. Five, six, and eight, as well as there's a general objection to 9 through 25. Those are included in there. And I guess from a practical nature, the objections are the same down the line. It's Mr. Orion's not the corporation, and the corporation's in this case. Therefore, he doesn't have to answer.
Well, let me ask you a question about that. I was originally going to ask counsel, but he answered it fairly early in the argument. I was going to ask, is Mr. Orion the only owner of this company? Is he the only person who ran it? Is it really just him, and therefore all the records are his? Or are there others involved? Now, if you're employed by General Motors, you can't make and you're being sued, you can't make General Motors produce documents.
That's correct.
Okay. Global Horizons is not a party to this case. He may not be in a position to produce these documents because he doesn't control the corporation. How is his response inadequate if that's true?
His response is inadequate because he's the president. He has personal knowledge of the subject of the interrogatories, and he refused, flat out refused, to provide the information that was in his head, saying, you have essentially not asked me in my corporate capacity, simply because Global Horizons was not named as a party doesn't mean the president, the admitted president of those two companies, cannot answer the information that's in his head. Additionally, Your Honor, if the court is inquiring as to whether or not or why not there wasn't any third-party discovery, some of the minimal information that was given to us by Mr. Orion was that these companies had ceased doing business in, I think, of September 15th, roughly 2010 or 2011, I don't remember the exact year, but there were no more employees. He is the figurehead, and he's the one who's going to possess this information, and that's why we were seeking it from him.
We were seeking corporate documents also.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, and to the extent he can't provide them, he can't provide them, but that doesn't excuse or somehow excuse him from his obligation to provide the information that he has personal knowledge of. And that is specifically what Judge Miller was getting at in the May 16th hearing, and that's what he was asking over and over and over of counsel from Mr. Orion, is why can't, assuming he doesn't have access to those records because he's locked up in Hawaii and the corporations in Canada, why can't he answer what's in his head? And there's no, he's playing on a legal fiction here. It's the same person, regardless of whether I'm asking him in the street or in the 10th floor of his office building. The same information is within his head, and he was playing off some sort of legal fiction that because you're asking me in a suit where I'm named individually about information I know in my corporate capacity, I don't have to answer. And that's what the judge was getting at, and that's what he still refused to answer at the end of that May 16th hearing. That's why Judge Miller presented with a record that was before him, which included two motions to compel. In fact, it also included a motion to continue the trial, in which, I believe, Mr. Orion stated he would not request an extension for discovery. Two motions to compel. The second motion to compel, putting him on notice that the court would entertain default judgment, essentially.
Is there a hearing before that order was in? Just on paper?
It was on papers, I believe, Your Honor.
The first time the counsel ever appeared before the judge to discuss discovery disputes was on May 16th?
Well, there was a pretrial conference November 8th at which counsel for Mr. Orion did not appear. Counsel for Mr. Grong did appear.
The first time counsel for Mr. Orion appeared before the court to discuss discovery issues was May 16th.
There was a pretrial conference in April as well, Your Honor. To that point, Your Honor, I believe that the deficiencies in their responses are so basic, they're so rudimentary, that a lengthy hearing on this point was not necessary. As the court pointed out, the court flat out in its second motion to compel said, or order to compel, said that I find these deficient. It just required answers. There were no answers given. One thing I do want to point out for the court is the case of Pinkstaff. I think that's clearly distinguishable from the case at hand. That's one case that's been cited quite a bit by both sides. And the history of that case is quite different than what we have here. What led up to the motion for a default judgment in that matter is certainly distinguishable. There was a discovery dispute between the parties. The court had a hearing. It ordered certain discovery to happen by September 10th. That didn't happen by September 10th. It happened by the middle of October. There was a smaller discovery dispute after that, at which time it sounds like from the reading of the opinion, the court just got so frustrated it threw its hands up and entered default. That's clearly distinguishable than what we have here. We have a repeated willful and continued refusal to respond to discovery in violation of court orders, Your Honor.
This could be viewed as a second time the judge looks at it, he throws up his hand in frustration. And what is that different from Pinkstaff?
It differs from Pinkstaff in one, because the court goes through question by question specifically what's lacking as far as answers
He does it at the hearing he's about to impose sanctions for. He doesn't before then. He doesn't go before question by question before that time, does he?
He does not, but there are two court orders before that time. There's, in fact, a motion for immediate entry of default judgment, and the judge doesn't rubber stamp it. He says, sua sponte, I'm going to vacate the trial date, and you're going to appear for me, and you're going to explain to me in court, we're going to have a conversation about why you're not answering. And at the conclusion of that, where Mr. Orion, through counsel, is given adequate opportunity to explain his position, the court finds his position, one, unfounded, and actually goes beyond that and says it's willful and says to something to the effect, on all my years on the bench, I've never seen something like this. It is, Your Honor.
Persist to the objection. They will get you.
He continued to persist to the objections, Your Honor.
Will fly.
Yeah, I believe so, Your Honor.
Frustration of the...
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor. And I won't specifically say he threw his arms about,
but... Oh, I don't mean that.
I think it was a position where he was to the point that multiple court orders had not been adhered to. He'd heard from counsel for Mr. Orion his position, which he found unfounded, and there was really no willingness to provide that information at the end of that. So that's...
This hearing was held May 16th, 2011. When was the trial set for?
May 16th, 2011.
Same day?
It was set then and been vacated prior to. I believe the court vacated...
So this appearance on May 16th was for the first day of trial. And you had not prepared a trial management order and done all of the other normal things that plaintiffs are required to do.
This is correct, Your Honor. And one thing I point out is the trial management order is separate and distinct from Mr. Orion's discovery obligations. And because he had violated his...
But was this case ready to go to trial but for the discovery violations on May 16th?
Well, simply put, it couldn't go to trial on May 16th because of the discovery violations. My client was...
You could have... Had the discovery been complete, it could have gone to trial?
Your Honor, it depends, obviously, on when that had been provided. The trial was vacated on the 12th, so obviously if that discovery had been provided on the 12th, I do not believe that would have provided enough time to review it and be prepared for trial. Nevertheless, when we get to the 16th, we're in a position where we cannot take this case to trial because the discovery has not been provided. Mr. Orion has taken away our ability to prepare this case.
I understand that. My question is, had you had the completed discovery, could you have gone to trial? And I think your answer is no.
But, Your Honor, and I guess it's a timing aspect, but I guess when are you referring to when we had the discovery?
Had you had the completed discovery on May 1st when it was ordered, could you have been ready to go for trial on May 16th?
You know, that's roughly 2 weeks. We don't know what would have been provided. It would have been obviously a trial lawyer's perspective on how much time you need to prepare.
How many witnesses had you endorsed?
Your Honor, we had not endorsed, we hadn't prepared the trial management order at that point, simply because we hadn't received any discovery.
Well, the discovery has something to do with preparing a plaintiff's case, but not everything to do with preparing a plaintiff's case.
If I can end on this, is the preparing the trial management order was merely smokescreen on behalf of Mr. Orion. It was an illusion of preparedness for trial. And why should we have to bite into that game? Why should we have to play into that game when ultimately he has not lived up to his discovery obligations and he's willfully violated court orders? The case at that point simply couldn't go to trial because of his actions. Like I said in the beginning,
It doesn't look like that's the only reason it couldn't go to trial.
You know, I would submit to the court that without that information, would it be extraordinarily difficult to present this case to a finder of fact. We wouldn't have the information that was in his head and that should have been answered long ago. So all parties should have been ready for the 16th.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You need a minute to, you want to say something, have a minute to say something?
Your Honor, allow me.
We'll hear you.
With all due respect to Mr. Whitney, he was not the primary attorney handling this, so I think he's mistaken on a couple of history points. One, as of May 16th, you will notice if you look at the transcript, the judge specifically had not vacated the trial date, and that was, he made that very clear in his May 16th order. He had refused to vacate the trial date.
I thought as of May 12th, the record would reflect that he had vacated the trial date.
I apologize, Your Honor, as of May 12th. So as of May 12th, you are correct, but when we were there, he essentially, if you were to review the transcript, you will see that the judge opened with a five-minute discussion of this is set for trial today. Why isn't it ready for trial today? I just vacated this on Friday. The plaintiffs had requested a jury, and that jury demand had never been withdrawn. So, I mean, they hadn't started drafting jury instructions. They hadn't done anything of that nature. So they had essentially done no pretrial preparation work, and you will see an attachment to some of the motions that Mr. Weiner, the primary counsel for the defendant, specifically told me in emails that you know that this isn't going to trial and that Mr. Orion isn't going to be out here. You will see, if you look in the record, there are emails from Mr. Weiner where he basically told me, we both know that Mr. Orion is never going to appear for trial. That's why they weren't doing any pretrial work, because they made a calculated decision, I believe, that he wasn't going to show.
Could that have been based on an inference from basically then, you know, no answers to discovery?
I would say no, Your Honor, because I made it very clear. I said I'm doing everything I can to get in touch with this guy, and I specifically told counsel for plaintiff in April that he had secured a court order, that he had secured permission from the Hawaii Federal District Court to leave this, to appear at this trial in Colorado. He had gotten specific permission to appear in Colorado the week of May 16th, and I had made that known to counsel for plaintiff. And
he was there?
Pardon me?
He was there?
No, he was not there. I let them know at the pretrial, it was an informal pretrial conference in the judge's chambers. He did not address the discovery issues at that point. I had let it be known to the judge, to Mr. Weiner, that Mr. Orion had secured permission from the court to appear at trial in May. And that is reflected in the record. And the only other thing I would ask, that at this May 16th hearing, when the question was asked whether I, as counsel for Orion, continued to make the same objections, I don't believe I did. What I was asked was explain the basis for my objections. Judge Miller said, tell me why you think this is a appropriate answer to X question. I gave my the best answer I could. I gave a good faith answer, much of it based on the issue of Mr. Orion was not and never was the sole owner of Global Horizons, that there's a huge, it's not a legal fiction, a company.
I didn't mean to start a new argument.
No, so, but in that particular, so during the hearing, he wasn't asking me whether I still made the same objections. I was being asked to explain the basis for these discovery responses, and I believe I was in good faith giving the judge the best legal arguments I could on behalf of my client, and that's that. But I was not remaking these same objections.
Did you tell me you provide more discovery?
I said I would do whatever I was necessary, Your Honor. But I mean, I wasn't given that chance. That if you were to read the transcript, you will notice that this is very much a case where the judge threw his hands up in the air. Whenever I said, tried to make the distinction between records that are in the control of a company versus records in the control of Mr. Orion, the judge actually said on the record, so again, this is the perfect crime for your client. The judge used the term perfect crime two separate times in this hearing to describe the judge was frustrated because I believe the trial court, with all due respect, had decided that Mr. Orion should be found liable and he wanted to get this off his calendar. I mean, how the very first time that this case that I ever appeared in front of him on the record.
Counsel, that's not unheard of.
That's right.
But I don't think it's appropriate to try to question other people's motives.
Understood.
And why they took particular action. We thank you for your argument.
Thank you.
The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.